right. He's going to hit the button. All of a sudden, we'll have power. Look at that. A couple things, just in one thing in regards to what Don said, and the other thing in regards to something I've noticed. One, release the best men, the willing men, to be able to come and to be able to say, how can we help, how can we come alongside Sister Church and just encourage to be a part of the body. So that's the first thing. I'd say willing instead of best. That's probably a good way to do that. The other thing I noticed is when I walked in, I noticed right away which stand was your pulpit. It was obviously the holy one. Just a that's a dad joke. it's a granddad joke. Thinking about what we're going to share, and I was just thinking, even about a year ago this time, Michelle and my wife and I were here, and because we had just begun for us 8 week stepping away from the church, we've been there for 24 years, and just a time to be able to reflect, a time to be able to recharge, not a time that we were said, you need to go study, you need to go learn some things, just go and spend time on the mountain, for the lack of a better word, with God, and just to recharge. And it was some health issues that we were going through at the time, I was going through at the time, and it was amazing, because looking back on that time now, and I've told people, I said, I wouldn't have changed anything, because God taught me so much in those times of going through difficulty, and it's amazing how God will do that. He needs to get our attention, and he says, you know what, I want to pull you aside for a while, and I want you just to be able to stop, to consider who I am, recharge in me. And for me, that was a huge thing, and I wouldn't change it. At the same time, I'm praying now that I'm feeling quite a bit better. God, help me not to be so short-minded that I forget what I've learned, because I don't want to go through that again. But not changing it, realizing that God is sovereign. I don't know if you are individuals who like to anticipate things, something's coming up and you're excited about it. I am. I think back, and you have those moments, right, where you do things and you're kind of really excited about this moment that's coming up. And I don't know if you realize it. Probably about 4 or 5 years ago, someone came up to me at church and made a comment to me, and this comment sticks out of my mind, because we think about Easter. We just celebrated a few months ago. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but today is Pentecost Sunday. And you have these disciples who, for, I guess, the lack of better words, were afraid. They had heard the promises of Jesus. They had heard what Jesus had said he was going to do. He said that all these things would happen, but they're in this room, and they're afraid, and they're praying. And on that day, Jesus fulfilled the promise that he gave and said, my spirit will come, and you're not going to do this alone. And I think one of the beauties of walking in faith is that we don't do it in our own ability and our own strength, but we do it by the power and the strength of God. And sometimes we forget that, and sometimes we show that we forget that by the fact that we just set out to do things. And what we really need to do is we just need to draw aside and say, God, I recognize that it's not me, but it's you in me who's going to be doing the work. And so as we think about today, as we think about the fact that today is Pentecost Sunday, then we go, God, thanks for your spirit. Right? Thanks that when I open up your word, it's not just another book like off the shelf, but it's a word that's alive. It's a word that speaks to me, and it's amazing, because I can read the same passage and it can speak to me in different ways, because your spirit opens my eyes in different ways to see who you are. Right? That is the power and the greatness of God. I want to read a verse out of Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23. And I'm going to be reading and referring to a number of verses. I'm not going to necessarily be opening up the Word and reading. One of the things that I've been able to do is just incorporate it into what I've got, and so I'm not always flipping to it. But what I want to do is to encourage you, if you have a pen, to write some of the verses down that we'll be going back to or I'll be mentioning. It gives you an opportunity throughout the course of the week to go back to those verses and let it kind of resonate in you, kind of marinate in the verses and kind of say, okay, what is the power in these verses, and what are they saying, and how do they apply to my life, especially in regards to what we looked at last Sunday? Because the faith journey that we're on, we know that God is making us, He's promised to make us more like His Son. And so what we have from week to week, what you get from week to week as far as messages or time you're on your own in the Word of God, are like meals, in that they'll sustain you and help you to become and grow in the way that God has intended. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23, it says this. In the ESV, it says, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. The NIV explains that word vigilance a bit, and that it says, guard your heart. Guard your heart. Why? Because it has value. You don't guard something that has no value. Guard your heart. Protect it. Keep careful watch over it. So when we think of the heart, when the Bible talks about the heart, one of the things we need to recognize and realize that in science, the heart is simply the organ in your body, a very vital organ, that pumps blood. But the organ itself doesn't think. It doesn't have feelings. But as we think of the Hebrew culture, the heart was seen differently. It was a metaphor for the core of our being. It was the very essence of who we are. It was a spiritual hub. Everything in your life oriented from your heart. Everything comes out of the heart, the seat of the emotion, your motivation, your will, your thought, your desire. And so when we encounter the word heart, most of the times in the Bible, what we need to remember is this definition. The definition when the Bible talks about the heart is that the heart is at the center of your personhood. The heart is at the center of who you are. And as we think about the heart, as we think about the definition in regards to the heart in this way, the heart is something that God has created with longings. He's created our hearts to be satisfied. He's created our hearts to know purpose. He's created our hearts to know joy, to know pleasure. And regardless of a person's age, regardless of a person's nationality, regardless of a person's social status, everyone has these desires and longings in their heart. All of us. Each one of us do the things that we do because in our hearts we believe that in doing those things, in some way, we'll be satisfied. In some way, they will meet a need that we have. And this morning we want to take some time. We want to be reminded of a battle that is going on. And the battle is for our hearts. When you wake up in the morning, the battle for the heart is there. And we become so used to doing things, we don't even recognize the battle is there because we wake up in the morning and often our minds will immediately go to your phone or your messages, but it doesn't necessarily immediately go towards God. It goes to all the things that got to be accomplished, all the things that have to be done, but it doesn't immediately, most often, go to say, God, thank you for that great night's sleep. because there's this battle going on. I believe that this battle for the heart is one of the main determining factors of whether or not a person will follow Jesus well or whether or not they're going to follow Jesus at all. And so this morning, what we want to do is we want to be reminded of some truths about the heart. But more than that, that we would honestly step aside and by God's Spirit, He would cause us to look at our hearts, that He would cause you to look at your heart. And you would be able to say, where does my heart lean? Where am I looking for things to be satisfied? I think it's important to realize a few things about the heart, the desires, significant why we have these desires and these longings, and kind of like I've already alluded to, it's because God has created us with that. Going back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2, we're told that God created all things. And when He created man, He created us with the ability to know and experience pleasure. He gave us the ability to smell, to see, to touch, to taste, to hear. God made us with the capacity to be moved to the core of our being. And I'm sure, as I mentioned those five senses, there's been some time in the last little while where you've said, yeah, I've been moved because of one of those things. I've been moved because of a sunset I've seen. I've been moved because I sat down at the table and I ate that thing. It was like, made me want to cry. So good. See, God created us to know pleasure. God created us to be satisfied. And we see that in creation. And God not only made us with senses, but He created a creation that would enhance those things. He made food that would taste. He made beauty that we would see. He would make sounds that would cause us to be amazed and to sit back and just to think because they were so incredible. God made us with a capacity to be moved to a sense of awe because of things that we would see with our eyes, because of things that we would hear with our ears. And in His design and creation, God man made man with the feelings of joy, pleasure, and desires. I don't know if you ever thought about it, but God could have very easily made everything bland. He could have made food with no taste. He could have made no color. He could have made things that we look at and there's no absolute beauty at all. It's just whatever. But He didn't. Instead, He created things to bring pleasure. And God placed mankind, as we look back in Genesis, God placed mankind in an environment to enjoy those things. Astonishing pleasures. He set them free and He said, go. Pleasures of sight, of sound, of smell, of touch. He placed him in the garden and it was an incredibly pleasurable place to be. Another thing that we can see in creation is that God said, it is not good to be alone. And so we're told that God made woman. God built within us the desire and the longing for companionship. God designed it so that others would bring satisfaction in our lives. Whether it's family, whether it's spouses, whether it's kids, whether it's workmates, whether it's friends, He's created us to have some of those longings met through others. As well, in Genesis 2, chapter 2 and verse 15, we're told that the Lord God took man and He put him in the garden to work it and keep it. You see, we would experience pleasure and fulfillment in creation. We would experience pleasure and fulfillment and satisfaction in relationships. But we would also experience a sense of satisfaction in the things that we would put our hand to. The things that we would accomplish. A few of the desires that God created us with. And the thing that really amazes me as we think about that and as we read through the Genesis account in the beginning is that God looked at what he had made and what did he say? It was good. It was good. And what we see is that these desires and these longings that we have at the core of our being are good. The desire for satisfaction and fulfillment is good because that's the way God made us. But God gave us all these good gifts. He made them so that creation would point to him. So that it would point to the one who created, to the one who gave the longings, to the one who gave the desires, that everything would point back to him. He did not give the gifts so that we would worship creation. And what we see in the wonder of creation is that it should point us to the Creator. When we sense the need and desires for longing, it should point us to the one who made it. When we sense the desire for companionship, it should point us to the one who created us and knows us best. When we think about satisfaction and things we put our hand to, with gratitude, we should go back to the Father and say, God, thank you that you've been provided and gave me the ability to do these things. Because everything, in some way, should magnify the one who's made it. But the problem came when man desired creation more than the Creator. And we know that. When sin entered the world, all of a sudden there was a shift. All of a sudden there's a shift where true satisfaction and delight were looked to be found. Man's heart longed after the things that were created rather than the one who created, and all of a sudden things started to fall apart. In Romans chapter 1, 22 and 23, it says this, claiming to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Claiming to be wise, they exchanged the glory of God for all these other things. In Jeremiah 2 verse 13, he writes this, God says, for my people have committed two evils. One, they have forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and they've hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water, because everything apart from God will not do what only God is intended to do. Everything. And when we look to creation rather than the Creator to satisfy, what happens is that creation, rather than being a means to enjoy the Creator, becomes its rival. And the battle is on. When we become fixated and entranced on God's gifts, seeking them, in them, something we cannot find, we will not find it. If you look to something other than God, it will not happen. Because all the glory, all the satisfaction, all the delights, all the things that these pleasures in and of themselves offer will always fall short of the glory of God and what was really intended for our hearts. In the end, the heart's deepest longing is not truly satisfied by any of God's gifts, but God himself. To see him, to know him, to be in his presence. Psalm 27:4. In your presence there is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. In your presence there is fullness of joy. Full. Not in any way lacking. 100% over the top. Fullness of joy, of satisfaction, of longing, desires met. So as we think of this battle that's happening in our hearts, the struggle really involves two things. On one side, there's God the Creator, and on the other side, things in creation that call out to us very loudly, come, come to me instead. Find your satisfaction in me. You'll be most happy if you seek after me. But it's amazing because we read through the scripture and God makes it really clear. He makes it really clear where we should go. Really clear what we should see. In Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 to 3, it says this, "And God spoke these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me." And I asked the question, I think it's a good question to ask, because when you read something in the Bible, well, why did God put that there? Why did God say this to the people of Israel? Because he knew that their hearts would lean away from him. And so he's saying right up front, no other gods, nothing else. Follow me. He knew that their hearts would be drawn away from worshiping him, the Creator, and instead would lean to be seeking their protection and meaning and satisfaction in other things. And he's saying, trust in me. Trust in me. These verses address a real deep problem of the human heart. It's idolatry. When we take someone or something and we put it in the place that is reserved and should be given to God. Something has so captured us that we become enamored by that thing and God fades off in the background. And sometimes that happens without us even realizing it and recognizing it. But idols will not satisfy. Only God will. And he says, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. No other gods. When God says, you shall have no other gods, one commentator said this. He said, what God is saying is, I want you to gladly reflect back to me the radiance of my worth. Because there is nothing as glorious as me. There is nothing in all creation that is as great as I am. There is nothing that should cause your heart to rejoice as much as I do. You see, with the people of Israel, God had initiated it. He had initiated the relationship. He had brought them out of slavery. He was the one who would provide. He was the one who gave them a hope and saying, look to the future. It's not because of what you've done, but it's because of who I am. So come, and as a result, worship me. You ever ask, maybe you've asked, if you've had kids, you've asked them a question, and you're kind of asking a question, but you're not really asking a question. You're trying to make a statement through the question, right? Or maybe someone's done that to you. They've thrown out a question, but you already know where they're going. Right, you know what the answer is. The question is just there because I don't know why it's there. It's there. In Exodus chapter 15 and 11, it says this. It says, who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you in majestic, in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders? A number of questions. Who's the question aimed at? Who is like you, O Lord? What's he going to say? Absolutely no one. Absolutely nothing. It's one of those questions that you look at and you read and go, it's kind of a dumb question. But the question reaffirms to the person who's asking it that God is the ultimate. Ask the question, but he knows the answer. In Deuteronomy 11:16, God says this. He says, take care lest your heart be deceived and you turn aside and you serve other gods and you worship them. You see, when God makes this statement, you shall have no other gods to me, what he's doing is he's calling for the people's hearts. He's saying, this is what you were made for. This is what you were created for. This is the longings that you have, and it's found in me. Do not try to find in other things what can only be found in me. Don't let other things pull off the affections of your heart, but instead do what you were created to do, to love me. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 to 6, he says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. The people of Israel were to love them with the core of their being. Why were these things to be on their heart? Because that was the center of who they were. That's the way that God had made them. And he said, love me with your whole being. How? By delighting in me, by finding pleasure in me, by enjoying me as the creator, by being obedient to me, by finding your satisfaction in me. Because I alone, he says, am worthy of your heart. Let God determine your actions. Let God be the one who drives the things that you do in life. John Piper says this, to love God does not mean to meet his needs, but rather to delight in him and be captivated, I love that word, captivated by his glorious power. This morning in the worship time, Donnie read from Isaiah chapter 6, and he sang that song, holy, holy, a great God, let him captivate you, let him so take you in that you stand there mesmerized because he is so amazing. He says, delight in him and to be captivated by his glorious power and grace and value him above all other things on earth. Joel Rigney in his book, The Things of Earth, Treasuring God by Enjoying His Gifts, says this, to love God fully is to max out our capacity with love for him. Whatever capacity we have to love, be it with the heart, with the soul, with the mind, or all our strength, we should give it all to God. To love God means that he should be the pinnacle, the peak, the climax of our heart's affections in all things. Matthew 6:21, Jesus says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Treasure. That which has risen to importance in some aspect of your life. That which is giving some kind of control of what's happening because it's something you desire. A treasure is something that you seek after. A treasure carries with it the idea of when I have this treasure, what I have is something that will satisfy. And Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart, your desires, your longings, that which drives you will be also. And so for the people of God, he is saying, I am the only God. I should be your treasure. I should be the one that you love. I should be the one in whom you find joy. But yet, as we read through the Old Testament, what do we see? Over and over and over again, the people of Israel turning away from God and trying to find their joy, trying to find their satisfaction, trying to find the needs that they have in life met in other things. And it makes me wonder how they could not see the futility of what they were doing. Why wouldn't they learn? Why couldn't they see that all the promises of the things that they were seeking after would never deliver? Why? And it brings us to today. And it brings it to our hearts, brings it to my heart. And I wonder, am I really that much different? Am I really that much different? We know that God calls us to worship Him. We know that we're called to love Him with our whole being. We know that we are to treasure Him above all else. But this morning, if we honestly stopped and we examine our hearts, where does the treasure lie? What is winning the battle for your heart? What are the things that drive you? Where do you go to try to fill the longing for satisfaction, for fulfillment? Do we merely look to the pleasures around us and we say, that's what I was made for? Do we look to food? Do we look to entertainment? Do we look to sex to satisfy? Maybe this morning we look to the power and say, if I could only have control over this, then I'd be happy. Do we look to achievement or money and say, if only I could get this done, I'd finally be satisfied. If only I could buy this, obtain this, then I know I'd be happy. Just one more thing and I've got it made. What drives our hearts? Or maybe we think, if only I could find the right person. If only I could have a good family. If only my kids would be happy. If only they would listen to what I would say. And the if onlys go on and on and on. And we say, if only, then things would be good. Is God really our God like the people, or like the people of Israel? Do we find our main satisfaction and happiness in other things? And I think it comes back to asking ourselves those questions. To consider who He is, to consider what we look like. What disappoints you? Because the things that disappoint us often tell us where our heart lies. What do you complain about the most? Because the things that you complain about often, again, reflect what's in your heart. It's amazing what whining shows us about an individual. Where do you make financial sacrifices? Again, because where the money goes often shows where our God is sitting. What worries you? What wakes you up at night? Or more than that, maybe what keeps you from maybe being able to fall asleep at night? I was thinking about that question. One of the bad habits I have right now, I don't know if it's a habit, maybe it's a routine. It's not even a routine, it's just bad. I used to be able to, when I went to bed, I would lay down and I would fall asleep so fast that I'd be sleeping before my head hit the pillow and I couldn't remember anything until the morning. My son and I used to have sleepovers in his room when he was growing up, and he'd be up in his bed and I'd be on the floor. That was kind of backwards now to think of it. But I'd be on the floor and I would ask him a question, and before he had an opportunity to answer, I would be asleep. And I remember one occasion we had that happen, and it was the second night of the sleepover, and we were talking a bit, and he goes, Dad, and I said, yeah. He goes, when you ask me a question tonight, can you stay awake while I answer it? But recently, usually 3-4 o'clock in the morning, I'll wake up. Something will come to my mind, and if it comes to my mind, I'm just got to get up and either write something down, or I'll read, or spend some time praying for about an hour, hour and a half, then I have the ability to go back to sleep. I just shut it off again, and it's gone. But I was thinking about that statement. What keeps you awake at night? And I started to think, well, why? Why is my mind going the way it does? I've come to, over the last 3-4 years, value this time. But why? Is it because I'm placing some priorities on things that I need to say, God, you need to take this because I can't really deal with that? That's got to be you. But what makes you mad? Where do you go when you hurt? Why do strangers have such incredible pull over your emotions? What are your dreams? What are your motivations? Questions that we ask, questions that reveal as we stop and say, where does my heart really lie? Where does my allegiance, where do I find fulfillment? Because the reality is we're continually bombarded by things that say, come and find your joy here, satisfaction here, desires filled here. That's the message of our culture. That's the message. That's the battle. In Matthew 6:24, Jesus says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate one and then love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And what Jesus is simply saying is you can't serve two gods. You can't. You need to choose. And so this morning, as we think of this verse in Proverbs, we say, I need to look at my heart. Because what does my heart say? Proverbs 27:19 says, as in water, face reflects face, so the heart of man reflects the man. The way you live reflects what is in your heart. The heart is the truth of your identity. What is fighting for the affections of your heart? Do we know it? Do we see it? Or are we even aware of it? Application. Number one, I want to encourage you to enjoy God's gifts. Whether it be in things you do, people you love, achievements, beauty around us. But don't let the joy end in the gifts. Let the joy point you back to the Creator. When you see the beauty of a sunset, when you look across the room and you see a child or a grandchild, when you're out with the ability to maybe ride a bike, to work in the garden, and you're in that moment where you're feeling satisfied, ask God by His Spirit to direct your eyes to Him. Because it's because of the grace of God that your longings and satisfactions are filled in those things. But it was made so that you would find your greatest satisfaction in Him. Secondly, if this morning you have recognized that the affections of your heart have been misplaced, you need to come before God and say, God, I repent of that. God, I've got to turn. Remember, it's a battle. And I think that if we think, any of us think of ourselves outside that battle, we have been deceived. In Psalm 51, it says, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love, according to your abundant mercy. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know that my transgression and my sin is ever before me. Against you and you only have I sinned, and I have done evil in your sight. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me." And if you want to deal with misplaced affections, make sure that you're not just simply treating the symptoms. Don't simply remove the issue, but go to the heart. If it was a gambling issue, don't simply stay away from the casinos. If it's an anger issue, don't simply say, "I'm going to count to 10. If you're having difficulties with your spouse in relating, don't just simply say, "I'm going to schedule more dates and buy more gifts." That would help. But don't just do that. If you're drowning in debt, don't simply cut up the credit cards. Because doing all those things would be good, but so often we tend to deal with what we see on the outside and we don't come back and look at the heart and say, "Why is it happening in the first place?" A number of years ago, many of you know Miles White. Miles was at the church when I first arrived at Courtney Baptist. And loved playing games growing up. Very competitive. I am anyways. One daughter, very competitive. One daughter couldn't care less, which makes me, You ever played a game, a competitive game against somebody who doesn't care? And two in a house will just play just so it can happen. And I remember going to the church one day and I said to Miles, "I'm not going to play games anymore." He goes, "Why?" "Because it makes me so frustrated and mad." We sit down and things happen and it's like inwardly I'm just going, "Oh," right? And God used Miles in that moment and he said, "It's not playing the games that's the issue, it's your pride." And it cut to the heart. You see, so often when we look at issues that we have, when our affections have been wrongly placed, what we do is we say, "I'm going to deal with the things that are out here," but God says, "You need to deal with the things that are in here." In here. We need to think of our heart the way the Hebrews did, as a source from which your life flows, your thoughts, your emotions, your actions. Because we will spend a lot of time, energy, money, and frustration removing the trash when what we need to do is we need to go to the source of the trash. Thirdly, guard your heart. Guard your heart. Proverbs 4:23 says this, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life." How do we guard our heart? And this is where I'm thankful for today as a reminder that we don't guard our hearts in our own ability. This is when I'm thankful that God gave His Spirit so that I am not doing this on my own because I could never do it, but there's someone greater helping me along. How do we guard our hearts? We guard our hearts by trusting in the Creator. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make straight your path." You guard your heart by focusing on the Creator. Psalm 46, 10. "Be still and know that I am God." That's tough. To stop, to be still when there's so many things you could be doing. To stop and to ponder and to consider and to think about God and who He is and what He has done is hard when our to-do list is big. But you guard your heart by doing that. Look to the beauty and the power and the character of God and worship Him with your whole being. Stop and consider the wonder of who He is. You guard your heart by asking God to draw your heart to Himself. In Psalm 119 and verse 36, it says this, "Incline my heart to your testimonies and not towards selfish gain. Turn my eyes away from looking at worthless things and give me life in your ways." You guard your heart by asking God to satisfy you with Himself. Psalm 19, verse 14 says, "Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all of our days." Because when you are satisfied in something, you're not going to be looking somewhere else for what is already satisfied. It's when you become dissatisfied, it's when you no longer see something for what it is. God, help me to be satisfied in you. He says, guard your hearts in this battle. And let me help. And finally, I would encourage you, I encourage myself, to realize the power of the gospel. Know the incredible hope that we have because of the fact that Jesus came, lived, died, rose again, and is now seated at the right hand of God. Know the power of the gospel that Jesus brings for the past, for the present, and for the future. In the past, the power of God has saved us from the penalty of sin, from wrongly placed affections. In the present, the power of God gives us the ability to overcome the power of sin and the enticement away from finding our pleasure in God. Again, another commentator wrote this. He says, "By the grace of the cross, the power of sin has been broken, but that doesn't mean that we are sin-free. No, sin still lives with destructive and deceptive power in each of our hearts, and its hold over our hearts is being eliminated by the sanctifying grace of God." Gospel power for right now. And power for the future, and that the gospel will save us from the presence of sin. There will come a day when there will be nothing else. Drawing for your passions, drawing for your longings, saying, "Find your satisfaction in me," because you will be in the presence of God and all those other things will be gone. Believe and hope in the gospel for what it's done, for what it's doing, and for what it will one day do for us. And so we've been reminded this morning of the battle for a satisfied heart, and the question I leave you with is, what is your heart fixed on? What are the things that are driving you? Because like Jesus said, there can only be one king. Everything about you, everything you do, every relationship you have, every hope, every dream depends upon who is winning the battle.